Welcome to the Cancer Care Connect workshop. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During the workshop, you will hear from our panel of expert speakers. We will allow time for questions and comments following the presentation. Instructions will be given at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the workshop, please press star then zero on your touchtone telephone. As a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. I would like to introduce your moderator for today's workshop, Dr. Carolyn Messner, Senior Director of Education and Training at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Well, thank you so much, Rob, and I too would like to welcome everyone to the Cancer Care Connect Education Workshop, Updates in the Treatment of Estrogen Receptor ER Positive, Progesterone Receptor PR Positive, and HER2 Positive Breast Cancer from the 47th Annual San Antonio Breast Cancer Symposium, or SABCS. And today's program is supported by Bristol-Myers Squibb, an educational grant from Daiichi Sankyo, and a grant from Genentech. And we really want to thank them for their support of today's program. Now, I just want to let you know a little bit about who's on the program. We have over 120 participants on the program today. You come from all over the United States, from both urban, rural, suburban, and frontier communities. And we also have international participants from Canada, the Philippines, Saudi Arabia, Uganda, and the United Kingdom. So it is a global call, and it's a credit to each of you that you've chosen to spend this next hour with us. And now it is my pleasure to introduce our first speaker. And our first speaker is Dr. Kate Lathrop, and Dr. Lathrop is Associate Professor, Division of Hematology and Oncology, UT Health San Antonio Breast Medical Oncology, Mays Cancer Center at UT Health San Antonio, Assistant Dean of Undergraduate Research, Long School of Medicine, UT Health San Antonio, Program Director, Medical Oncology and Hematology Fellowship Program, UT Health San Antonio, and Program Director, San Antonio Breast Cancer Symposium. And Dr. Lathrop will be addressing updates from the 47th San Antonio Breast Cancer Symposium on diagnostic testing, biomarkers, precision medicine, graded hormone receptors, chemotherapy updates from the San Antonio Breast Cancer Symposium, what's new in the treatment of estrogen receptor ER positive and progesterone receptor PR positive and breast cancer from the San Antonio Breast Cancer Symposium, and updates from the San Antonio Breast Cancer Symposium on hormone and targeted treatments. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Lathrop.
Thank you so much, Dr. Messner, and thank you guys for joining all over the world. I'm excited to talk to you a little bit about some updates in the estrogen receptor positive realm of breast cancer. I was going to go over three studies with you today, and I picked these three studies because I think they're important in how we treat our patients, but also they touch on some different parts of the treatment journey for our patients, both in the setting of trying to prevent recurrence and trying to choose the best treatments, and then also what we can potentially do for women who do have a recurrence of their breast cancer. So the first trial I'm going to talk about is called Olympia, and this trial has been going on for multiple years, and at this point we have some follow-up for almost 10 years on some of the first patients who went on the trial. And this trial specifically looked at patients who have a mutation in a gene called BRCA, so either BRCA1 or BRCA2, which is one of the most common genes that we see for women who have genetically linked breast cancer. And this trial allowed patients who were just HER2 negative. So some of these patients were triple negative, but the majority of them were estrogen receptor positive. And these patients were treated with chemotherapy, they went to surgery, if they needed radiation, they had that. And then the question was, if these women were given a medication, which is called a PARP inhibitor, that helps us actually target the mutation that they have, and that medicine, in this case, is called olaparib, whether we could prevent recurrence. And the overall take-home message from that is that we can actually decrease the risk of these patients having a recurrence of their breast cancer if we give olaparib along with their hormonal therapy for 1 year. So when we look at these patients, and we've now been following the average number of 6 years for these patients, we're able to decrease the risk of recurrence by about 4.5%. And when you add up everything, that is actually a significant amount of decrease for these patients. One of the nice things about this study is we're able to look at all the different clinical characteristics of the patients and how they were treated. And it does appear that all patients, regardless of whether they were BRCA1 or BRCA2 mutated, and regardless of the type of chemotherapy they received either before or after surgery, they did appear to benefit from this additional medicine. So this study confirmed that a medication we're already using in our clinic is helping our patients with decreased risk of recurrence in this very specific population of patients that have this genetic mutation, which is called BRCA1 or BRCA2. The other interesting thing about this study was we know patients with BRCA mutations have increased risk of developing other cancers, so they can develop cancer in the other breast, and they're also at higher risk of developing things like ovarian cancer and pancreatic cancer. And overall in this population, we saw fewer new, so unrelated to their original breast cancer, malignancies form in these patients. So we think maybe there could be a signal that there's some prevention going on for women who are treated with olaparib for a year. So the second trial I want to talk about is, I thought was very interesting and clinically meaningful for our patients, and that was looking at a group of patients that were already treated on a clinical trial, which is called TAILOR-RX. And that trial has been done and it's concluded. And what that looked at is a test called an Oncotype, which some of you may be familiar with. The Oncotype is a test done on the breast tissue, and it helps us determine the risk of the cancer reoccurring, but also how chemotherapy can impact or decrease that risk. It's a test that we use very often in our patients that are hormone receptor positive and of a certain stage, certainly if the tumor size is about more than a centimeter or if any of the lymph nodes are involved, those are the patients that we start considering sending this test on. So what we know from that trial was for patients that have a certain score, which is around 26, that those are the patients that really start to benefit from giving chemotherapy after surgery. And by benefit, I mean that it decreases the risk of recurrence. So what this study specifically looked at is who benefits from a three-drug regimen that includes a medication which is called an anthracycline, and who can we give just a two-drug regimen to which does not include the anthracycline. The reason this is important is we want to make sure that we're giving enough treatment to decrease the risk of recurrence, but we also want to make sure we're not giving too little treatment. So it's trying to tailor that treatment, and that's why this parent trial was called TAILOR-RX. So what was found is that for patients that have a recurrence score of at least 31, so originally we were thinking at least 26, they need chemotherapy or they benefit from chemotherapy, but if that score is even higher, if it gets up to 31, then those are the patients that we actually see benefiting from the three-drug regimen, including the anthracycline, versus women that we might be able to just give two medications to. So why is this so important? Well, anthracyclines particularly have side effects that we worry about. Some of those side effects are immediate, like fatigue and nausea and increased risk of infection. But some of those side effects are actually delayed, meaning that they don't occur until potentially years later. And those can be very serious side effects. They're rare, but they're serious. And so whenever that happens, that's definitely in our thought process. So those side effects are things like heart failure, and then rarely also the development of another cancer, which is called acute myelocytic leukemia. So we really want to just give that medicine to patients that benefit. The nice thing about this study is they really dug down and they tried to figure out, besides just the recurrence score of at least 31, was there other clinical features that predicted that those patients did better with an anthracycline? And they found that the tumor size matter, and that if the tumor was at least 2 centimeters, that also favored treatment with the anthracycline. So I think this is going to help us in clinic when we are able to know from the oncotype that doing chemotherapy is potentially beneficial, but this helps us really determine what chemotherapy regimen we can give and who we can give a slightly less intensive regimen to, but still get all the benefit. So the final trial that I want to go over with you is actually in the metastatic setting. So this is looking at patients with hormone receptor positive breast cancer that has come back, and it's called the EMBER-3 trial. And this trial is really important because it's looking at patients that either recurred very quickly after finishing their hormonal therapy in the adjuvant setting, which is after surgery, or patients who have had their cancer progress while they're on what is considered the first-line therapy for patients with metastatic estrogen receptor-positive breast cancer. And that first-line therapy is hormonal therapy in addition to a type of medicine called a CDK4/6 inhibitor. So this trial had a little bit of a complicated design in that it had 3 different groups of patients. So these patients either received a novel type of medicine, which is called imlunestrant, which is an oral medicine. It's a pill that you take by mouth. And they compared that to patients who were just on hormonal therapy, which would be considered the current standard treatment. And then the third group were women who got both the imlunestrant but also continued on that CDK4/6 inhibitor. And in this trial, all the patients received what's called abemaciclib, which is one of the 3 CDK4/6 inhibitors that's approved for patients with breast cancer. So what this trial showed, again, we have 3 arms or 3 groups, and they were all compared to each other to see which group or combinations of medicines led to patients having their cancer controlled and not growing for the longest. So what this trial found was that the patients who were in the group that just received what's considered standard of care therapy, which is endocrine therapy alone, they had their cancer controlled for the shortest amount of time. It was really almost about 4 months. It was 3.8 months. Then the group that did the next best was the group that was on this new medication alone called imlunestrant. And those patients had their cancer controlled for an average of about 5.5 months. So they gained about 2 months compared to the standard treatment. Now, the arm that did the best was this new medicine called imlunestrant in combination with the abemaciclib, which is the CDK4/6 inhibitor. So this trial showed both that this new medication can be given safely with a CDK4/6 inhibitor, and that continuing that CDK4/6 inhibitor, even in patients who were on it and had their cancer growing, did appear to show some continued benefit of being on that medicine, which is a question that we've really had in clinic, and we have a few trials looking at that. The other thing that this trial looked at is a special mutation, which is called an ESR1 mutation, which is very common for women or for patients with metastatic hormone receptor positive breast cancer who have their cancer grow on a CDK4/6 inhibitor with hormonal therapy. It's common for those patients to develop this mutation in their cancer cells, and this leads to resistance to the medicines that they're on. And we saw that regardless of whether patients had that mutation or not, there was still benefit to being on this combination. So overall, this is opening up a potentially new therapy and a new therapeutic combination, which was tolerable and gave benefit to our patients in this early setting and for our patients who recurred very quickly after their initial therapy, which is a group of patients that we know is at higher risk and can be hard to find medicines that work for. So I'm going to go ahead and stop there.
Oh, well, thank you so much, Dr. Lathrop. That was just an outstanding presentation and really stellar. And you're the first presenter, so you kind of set the stage really very much so for the program today. And I know there'll be lots of questions for you during the Q&A, so thank you so much. And our next speaker is Dr. Adrian Wachs, and Dr. Wachs is Associate Director, Clinical Research Staff Physician, Breast Medical Oncology, Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, Instructor in Medicine, Harvard Medical School. And Dr. Wachs will be addressing investigational new drugs in clinical trials reported at the San Antonio Breast Cancer Symposium, what's new in the treatment of HER2-positive breast cancer, what's new in preventing and managing treatment side effects, including discomfort, neuropathy, long-term effects of the treatment for breast cancer, and guidelines to prepare for telehealth telemedicine appointments, including technology, prepared list of questions, and quality of life concerns, and discussion of open notes. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Wachs.
Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for having me. Good afternoon from Boston. I'm happy to be here with you. So I wanted to focus on three studies and abstracts that were reported at the San Antonio Breast Cancer Symposium focused in HER2-positive breast cancer and in the management of side effects and how we communicate with our patients about side effects as part of their breast cancer treatment. So to start with important updates for metastatic HER2-positive breast cancer, I think one of the really key trials that came out of the meeting was a trial called PATINA. This was a trial that's really a practice-changing randomized phase 3 trial. It enrolled patients who had metastatic HER2-positive breast cancer that was also hormone receptor positive. So in addition to being HER2-positive, the patients on this trial also had ER and PR positivity and an estrogen-driven component of their breast cancer as well. And so patients on the trial all received the standard treatment regimen that we give for HER2-positive metastatic breast cancer when we're first starting to treat it, which is a regimen that we call THP. So this is the very first treatment you get upon diagnosis of a HER2-positive metastatic breast cancer. It's a chemotherapy called paclitaxel or docetaxel, and then the two anti-HER2 medicines, trastuzumab and pertuzumab, or HNP. So we call that regimen THP. And the old standard of care was that after you finished about 6 months of your Taxol or taxane chemotherapy, you transitioned into this maintenance with just the two anti-HER2 antibodies, the H and the P, trastuzumab and pertuzumab, and then stay on those two antibodies for as long as they're working to control your cancer, obviously. We hope a very long time. And we know that that's a successful strategy. It's been our standard for over 10 years for HER2-positive metastatic breast cancer. But what was being asked in this trial was if we could improve upon that current strategy by, in addition to using those anti-HER2 medicines, H and P, adding also a CDK4/6 inhibitor medication called palbociclib, or the brand name of palbociclib is Ibrance. And also I want to point out, since all of these patients also had an estrogen-driven component of their breast cancer, they were all also on some sort of anti-estrogen medicine. Most of them were on the anti-estrogen pill called an aromatase inhibitor. And so alongside their anti-HER2 antibodies and alongside their anti-estrogen medication, these patients were randomized to either receive the additional medication palbociclib or Ibrance, the CDK4/6 inhibitor, or not. And then the patients were followed to see how long the combination of medications was controlling their breast cancer. And we saw the results of this trial 2 months ago at the San Antonio Breast Cancer Symposium. And resoundingly and very convincingly, the patients who got the Ibrance medicine or the palbociclib medicine were able to have control of their breast cancer for significantly longer than those who didn't. So even though we know the anti-HER2 antibodies, we know that the anti-estrogen medications can maintain good control, we get even better control of metastatic HER2-positive breast cancer when we also add the medication palbociclib, which is an additional pill. And so these were really practice-changing data for our patients who have HER2-positive metastatic breast cancer and ER-positive metastatic breast cancer. I've been calling up my patients, actually, since these data came out, where this situation applies to them, and adding in the palbociclib medication for them, because we see now how important it is and how much impact we can have by hitting this additional pathway in HER2-positive metastatic breast cancer. So I think that was really exciting and sort of immediately practice-changing result for our patients in this situation, and it was wonderful to see how big of a difference that this made. The second abstract I wanted to touch on in HER2-positive, also metastatic breast cancer, is a different randomized phase 3 trial and one that didn't show benefit for the additional drug that we were studying, so is not going to be incorporated into clinical practice anytime soon. But, you know, I think also really important to highlight the studies where we look at drugs, we obviously hope that they work for our patients, and maybe we find out that they don't, and that's really important to know too, so that we're not adding extra side effects for people unnecessarily. So this trial was called NRGBR004, all these, you know, letters and numbers basically, but another randomized phase 3 trial throughout the United States, again, for patients who have metastatic HER2-positive breast cancer and are getting their initial treatment for their new diagnosis of metastatic HER2-positive breast cancer. And this trial was looking at adding an immunotherapy to the standard treatment that we give. So again, the standard treatment is a chemotherapy like paclitaxel or docetaxel, and then the two anti-HER2 antibody medicines. And this trial was asking the question, if we add an additional immunotherapy medicine to that regimen, can we help patients get control of their cancer for a longer period of time? So again, was a randomized phase 3 trial, half the patients got the standard regimen and half of the patients got the standard regimen plus the immunotherapy drug called atezolizumab. And, you know, this was a really important thing to investigate because we know that immunotherapy has had made a huge difference in lots of different types of cancers. In breast cancer, it's been especially impactful and is part of our standard of care now for triple negative breast cancer. And so it was really important to study whether it could additionally have effectiveness in HER2-positive breast cancer. And in the end, it turned out that the trial was kind of it was hard for the investigators to complete it. They were not able to enroll all of the patients that they hoped to. And in addition, as the trial was going on, they noticed that there were more serious side effects and safety problems for the patients who were getting the immunotherapy. And so for both of those reasons, the trial actually was closed early, and the data had to be looked at with a far smaller number of patients than they had hoped. But when they did look at the data, they were not able to see a significant difference that the immunotherapy drug had made. And again, there actually were safety concerns with the addition of the immunotherapy drug in this population. So for both of those reasons, you know, not a convincing impact on effectiveness, and a concern that maybe unacceptable side effects were happening with the immunotherapy drug addition. Immunotherapy, at least in this particular way, alongside the first treatment for HER2-positive metastatic breast cancer, is not going to be part of our standard practice anytime soon. So that's sort of one great success story for the palbociclib medicine and one disappointing but important result for immunotherapy in metastatic HER2-positive breast cancer. And then the third and final study that I wanted to highlight relates to the really important topic of how we gather information from our patients about their side effects and how they're feeling on their therapy when they're on treatment for a metastatic breast cancer. And so this study was called PRO-B, P-R-O-B. As you guys may know, PRO stands for patient reported outcomes, meaning patients are telling their doctor directly via a questionnaire or something like that what side effects they're having on a given therapy. And so this PRO-B study was for patients with metastatic breast cancer, and it was testing a smartphone application, so like an iPhone app or, Android app, that sort of thing. And on their smartphone via this application, patients in the study who are under any number of different treatments for metastatic breast cancer could report in to their medical team about what side effects they were experiencing, nausea or pain or tiredness, whatever it may be. And it was a randomized study where half of the patients got sort of their usual care for metastatic breast cancer and half of the patients got this extra smartphone app where they could report on their symptoms let their doctor and doctor's team know what side effects they were experiencing. And what the study found, they were primarily looking to see if use of the smartphone app compared to those not using it could improve patients' fatigue, how tired they were feeling over the course of their treatment with metastatic breast cancer. And impressively, it did do that. They did find that patients had lesser fatigue scores if they were able to be in this, close communication with their doctor and treatment team about their side effects via the smartphone app. So they saw improvement in fatigue, they saw improvement in a number of other side effects, and then really interestingly and also impressively, they also actually saw that patients were doing better in terms of how long they were living with their metastatic breast cancer if they were using this smartphone app. So I think it was a really impactful and important reminder to all of us on the patient side and on the doctor and provider side that when we have better communication about how our patients are feeling, how a dose of a certain drug is working for them, we can really improve outcomes as well as quality of life. Obviously, there are some downsides. This was a smartphone application, and that's not something that's easy to navigate for all of our patients, and we're well aware of that. So need to make more progress for sure on how to make this sort of reporting and communication accessible to everyone, because not everybody may have a smartphone, of course, and not everybody may be comfortable, using applications. But still a really important reminder about how communication about side effects and maybe using smartphones as a tool in that can really make an impact on how our breast cancer patients are feeling and doing long term. So I'll wrap up with that. Those were the three abstracts I wanted to highlight, and I'm delighted to answer questions. Thanks so much.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Wex. That was just a wonderful presentation, really stellar, and covering really such important areas. I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A as well. Thank you. And our next speaker is Ms. Cassie Spector, and Ms. Spector is an oncology social worker, and she's our breast and gynecological cancers program coordinator at Cancer Care. And she'll be addressing Cancer Care's free programs and services, and she'll let you know about how to contact Cancer Care and give you information about our website as well. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Ms. Spector.
Thank you, Dr. Messner. As mentioned, my name is Cassie Spector, and I'm the Breast and Gynecological Cancers Program Coordinator and Oncology Social Worker at Cancer Care. Cancer Care is a national nonprofit organization providing free professional support services and information to help people manage the emotional, practical, and financial challenges of cancer. Our comprehensive services include resource navigation, counseling, support groups, educational workshops, publications, and limited financial assistance. Individuals diagnosed with breast cancer may choose to supplement their existing social networks by joining a support group or engaging in counseling. There are many aspects of a breast cancer diagnosis that may be addressed through psychosocial supportive services. Some of these areas that you may discuss is making informed decisions, quality of life concerns, clinical trials, fertility options, and communication with one's medical team. Many hospitals, treatment centers, and nonprofit organizations offer supportive services. Being a member in a support group can also offer the opportunity to speak with others who are going through a similar experience as you are, obtain information, and provide support. Currently, Cancer Care offers several breast cancer support groups online. We offer a breast cancer patient group for those in active treatment, a breast cancer post-treatment survivorship group, as well as a metastatic breast cancer patient group. Our online support groups aim to reduce feelings of loneliness and anxiety, explore new ways of coping, increase feelings of empowerment, and provide practical information about treatment and resources. Our online support groups take place using a password-protected message board format and are led by oncology social workers. You may access our groups by going to Cancer Care's website, cancercare.org, selecting our services, and then support groups. You'll complete a registration process on our website, and you'll be able to access these groups 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Individuals may also experience practical and financial concerns through one's treatment. Please know if you're encountering financial hardships, there's organizations that may be able to help you. Cancer Care offers resource navigation services that is a short-term strength-based approach for both patients and caregivers affected by cancer nationally. A trained specialist will work with the client in connecting them with resources, referrals, and financial assistance. If you're interested in learning more about the support services we offer at Cancer Care, I encourage you to call Cancer Care's National Hopeline at 800-813-4673 to speak with one of our oncology social workers. At Cancer Care, our oncology social workers are trained trained to be able to assist anyone navigating a breast cancer diagnosis as well as their loved ones. It's been such a pleasure to be part of this program. Thank you so much, and I'll turn it back to Dr. Messner.
Oh, thank you so much, Ms. Spector. It's a wonderful resource for everybody on the program today, and please do take advantage of it, and just a wonderful presentation, just stellar. And now we're going to move on to the Q&A, and I'm going to ask Rob to explain to all of you how to queue up for questions. Rob.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, we will take questions from the web only. You may submit questions by clicking Ask a Question.
And we have a question for Dr. Lathrop. Verzenio can be a tough pill to take. When is the efficacy difference for 75 milligrams versus 100 milligrams versus 150 milligrams of Verzenio dosage for high-risk hormone-positive non-metastatic patients? Is the DFS dosage disease-free survival the same? Dr. Lathrop, could you address this question?
Sure. I think this is this in response to abemaciclib, which is Verzenio, if I heard correctly. I think the larger context to answer this in is a question we get a lot in clinic, which is, well, if I'm having a side effect and you decrease my dose, is it still going to work? Because I don't want to decrease the dose if it's going to potentially decrease the risk, you know, decrease the effectiveness of the medicine and increase my risk of either the cancer coming back or progressing, which is understandable to have that concern. Based on our clinical trial data that we have across multiple trials, if the dose is reduced because of a side effect that a patient is having, and we're able to match the more appropriate dose to that patient, it doesn't appear to decrease the efficacy of the drug, which is how well that medication either decreases the risk of recurrence in this particular question, or how long a patient will respond to an individual drug. So it's safe to decrease the dose to help manage toxicities. And I will say that medicines certainly don't work if we can't take them. So, you know, we do need to match the correct dose to the patient. That's very important.
Excellent. Thank you so much. And Dr. Wax, does high MSI microsatellite instability qualify a patient for Keytruda, particularly in the metastatic setting?
Yeah, thanks for the question. That is a great question. And the answer is yes. You know, in breast cancer, as actually across all solid tumors, patients can qualify for the treatment pembrolizumab or Keytruda, which is an immunotherapy drug, if they have one of two markers that we might find on testing the genetics of their tumor. One, they could have this microsatellite instability or high microsatellite instability, MSI high, are all sort of different phrases for the same thing. It's just a certain type of, a certain way of measuring sort of how many mistakes there are in the genes of a particular tumor. So if you have the MSI high marker in breast cancer, then you could qualify for the immunotherapy Keytruda. And the other related marker that we also look for in breast cancer that could qualify you for Keytruda is having what's called a high tumor mutational burden, or TMB, which is measured as a mutational burden of greater than or equal to 10. And both of those could mean that the immunotherapy Keytruda is a possible treatment for you. There's a couple important things to note. Both of those markers can be seen in breast cancer, but they're uncommon. So this is not a high percentage of our breast cancer patients who have those markers, but they're always important to look for, because if the marker happens to be there, it would open up that additional treatment option of the immunotherapy pembrolizumab for that patient. And then the other thing to say is, while that treatment is FDA approved, if you have those two markers, it's certainly I would use it in select patients, it's not as well studied as other treatments that we, you know, designed to target the estrogen receptor, the HER2 protein, standard chemotherapies or antibody drug conjugate therapies. And so my point there is just that absolutely, while pembrolizumab, Keytruda is a treatment option in those situations, it's not the first one that we would reach for. We would use, you know, better studied options first, but then keep it as a treatment option when we thought that something new and different was needed, maybe after some other treatments had stopped working.
Excellent. Thank you so much. And Dr. Lathrop, does the patient need TROP2 to receive Trodelvy?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's also a wonderful question. So just to give some background, TROP2 is a protein that is expressed on the vast majority of breast cancers that are either triple negative or estrogen receptor positive, which is the group that we're currently using these medicines in. And since the protein is so common, and because the early trials, which were the phase 2 trials with this medicine, did not show that the level of expression of TROP2 seemed to predict which patients benefited from sacituzumab, because of those two reasons, we do not test for TROP2. We just go ahead and give that medicine in the right clinical setting without testing for it.
Excellent. Thank you. And there's another question. For Dr. Lathrop, is endocrine therapy plus Verzenio ever given as neoadjuvant treatment prior to surgery in advanced stage 2-3 breast cancer?
Yeah, so that is not really considered a regimen that we would give that's necessarily been approved by our regulatory agencies. But we do know that CDK4/6 inhibitors in combination with hormonal therapy work in that setting based on some of our clinical trials that we've done with other CDK4/6 inhibitors particularly. And so there are occasions where we will talk to patients about using a CDK4/6 inhibitor like abemaciclib with hormonal therapy before surgery. And those are the patients that might have a particular type of cancer that would respond better to hormonal therapy instead of chemotherapy, and your doctor can kind of help figure that out. but it's cancers that tend to grow very slowly and are very sensitive to estrogen. Potentially the other setting you might use that in is you have a patient that can't tolerate or isn't a good candidate for chemotherapy based on maybe some other medical problems that they have. So it's not something we do commonly, but it is something that we do in very special situations.
Thank you. And Dr. Wax, are there changes in protocols for using Signatera, like ctDNA tests, as a standard of care? Are there any new diagnostic tests under development for ongoing monitoring for recurrence and onset of metastases?
Yeah, this is such a great question. And, you know, it's a question that I hear many, many times. You know, every time I'm in clinic with my patients, it comes up every day, multiple times a day. I'm sure that Dr. Lathrop has the exact same experience. So it's an excellent question. It's a super important question. And basically, you know, what it's getting at is that disappointingly, at this point in breast cancer, even in 2025, we don't have an established early detection marker for recurrence. So, you know, the large majority of our patients, we treat them with surgery, we treat them with radiation, we give them medicines like chemo or anti-estrogen pills, and then we hope together as the years go by that breast cancer will never come back. And for most of our patients, fortunately, we know that it does never come back. But patients are really wanting, a way to understand as those years go by, and we have to make decisions about, you know, should we stop the anti-estrogen medicines? Should we continue them longer than 5 years? Should we add medicines like Verzenio or Kisqali to reduce the risk of recurrence? We have to make decisions trying to make our best guess about whether a patient is at risk of recurrence or not. And so patients are always rightfully asking about whether there's an early detection marker that might help us figure out before we can see it on a scan and before it's a really serious problem, whether their breast cancer is, you know, starting to show signs of maybe coming back. And the most exciting technology that's been developed in the recent years in that respect is circulating tumor DNA. There's a lot of different tests to look for circulating tumor DNA. Signatera is probably the best known, but there are many others. And what this is looking for is little sort of genetic debris from the breast cancer that could be picked up on just a normal blood draw to find little tiny microscopic amounts and of tumor cells that might be circulating in a patient's blood. And at this point, you know, what I always tell my patients is that I am right there with them, hoping that we will find, and maybe that this, tests like Signatera will turn out to be the early detection marker that we've looked for in breast cancer, because so far, all the other early detection markers we've looked for, they really haven't turned out to be helpful. So I absolutely hope that tests like Signatera are going to turn out to be helpful. At this point, even though the technology exists, it's really hard to know what to make of the results, though. It's hard to know what to make of a result if it's negative, because we know that the tests can miss some problems that are going to develop. We know that tests can turn positive the next month, even if they're negative 1 month. So, you know, we don't exactly know what to do with a negative result. And we don't know what to do, in truth, with a positive result, because if we find that early detection marker, we know that's worrisome for that patient, but we don't know if there's something we should change at that point or what we should change to try to clear that circulating tumor DNA. So since at this point we don't really know what to do with a marker like Signatera if it's positive or if it's negative, I usually tell my patients it's not a test that I think is going to be helpful to send, because I'm not going to be able to do anything with the results. But it's a wonderful question, and it's an area in breast cancer where we need to clearly do better for our patients. I think the technology like Signatera is really exciting, but it's not ready yet to be sort of rolled out to everybody.
Thank you so much. And a question for Dr. Lathrop. If a woman has high BMI, body mass index, can she safely have breast reconstruction?
Sure. So also a good question, and I'll preface this with I am not a surgeon or a plastic surgeon. However, there is a certain BMI level that once we go above it, the literature is, the studies that have been done looking at this show that women are going to be at increased risk of complications if they are obese and over a certain BMI. And those complications include the risk that if the surgery involves moving of tissue or skin, which we call grafts, those grafts may not be able to attach with a good blood supply, and that graft may fail, and there may need to be a second surgery to remove that tissue and replace it with something else. It's also an increased risk of infection. And so I think that's that's a discussion you really need to have with your plastic surgeon. The other thing I'll say is that when women lose weight after surgery, that can also change the cosmetic result of the reconstruction, because we do lose fat in our breast too when we lose weight. So I think it's best to plan out with your plastic surgeon what your ideal weight is and try to get to that weight and then proceed with your surgery. And also losing weight if you're obese helps decrease your risk of breast cancer recurrence. So there's two benefits in one.
Excellent. Thank you. As a question for Dr. Lathrop, I was wondering if I should not be drinking water out of plastic bottles and trying to eliminate most plastic as possible from my foods.
Yeah, I'm not going to be able to give a well-informed, research-based answer to that question. I do think it's an important public health question that we are looking at, even outside of breast cancer, that microparticles and sometimes referred to as forever chemicals do appear to be something that is more common than it used to be. Plastics certainly contribute to it, but it's not the only thing. So I think some of the epidemiologists, which are scientists that study populations and the environment, certainly are going to be playing a part in our overall health going forward. But I'm not aware of any data that's really been able to strongly tie that to the risk of breast cancer. So I don't know if Dr. Wax has anything to add there.
I don't. I think it's a great, I echo everything you said. I think it's a great question and one where we have, unfortunately, really limited data, so it's hard to offer concrete guidance.
It's very hard to study things when everybody is exposed to something. It's easier when you have a group that maybe hasn't been exposed to something. Like, for example, might be smoking. You could look at a group of people who smoked and a group of people who didn't smoke and see the risk of certain cancers were higher. But at this point, we all live on one planet, and we've all been exposed to these microparticles. So it's hard to get the two groups together to study.
Thank you. I want to thank our speakers, and I also want to thank our participants for these really incredible questions. I'm going to ask our speakers to just provide a takeaway, just a minute or so takeaway for our participants to have. So I'm going to start with Dr. Lathrop, just a takeaway we'd like people to take away from today's program.
Yeah, I think what I would just say as a summary is that based on so many patients being willing to go on our clinical trials over the decades, breast cancer treatment is continuing to progress, and we're really focused on trying to figure out which patients need which therapy and not a one-size-fits-everybody. And these trials that I went over today is really part of that is we're not just treating breast cancer as one disease. We're treating it as multiple different types of breast cancer. And then even within the types, there's more to it. Like if you have a BRCA mutation or you don't, or you have a high risk oncotype. So I'm hopeful that we'll continue to be able to really tailor treatment to the patient to give the best benefit with the fewest side effects.
Thank you so much. Thank you. And Dr. Wax?
Thank you again for having me on this program today and for the really thoughtful questions. I would say meetings like the San Antonio Breast Cancer Symposium, which we have every year, always remind me of two main things. Number one, how excited I am and how happy I always am to work in breast cancer and with breast cancer patients, because we do see, every year, multiple times a year, actually, new data coming out, new drugs being developed. We change our practices. We have new FDA approvals. That's happening very regularly in breast cancer. So it's definitely a type of cancer where we are able to do a lot of studies and make a lot of progress. And we obviously need to make a lot more progress because there are many problems still to be solved. But it's always sort of energizing to see all of these new data come out. And then the second thing I always take away from these conferences and these conversations is just how much our progress rides on the bravery of patients and their family members who participate in these clinical trials. And it's just, so important to be part of clinical trials. If you have the opportunity to be, it really makes a huge difference for the rest of the world in terms of other breast cancer patients, so that we can figure out how we can do better, tomorrow than we were doing yesterday.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. Thank you. And Ms. Spector?
Thank you, Dr. Messner. I would say for me would be to know that you're not alone in terms of support, knowing that there's organizations like Cancer Care that you can reach out to. You have your medical teams to reach out to. Whether you're looking for support groups or you're looking for financial assistance, there's places that you can reach out to for support and guidance to figure out what's going to be helpful for you. So really just know that you're not alone and you can reach out to those who can assist you.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Thank you. I want to thank all of our participants for the wonderful questions you asked, really. We obviously couldn't take everyone's question. And I want to thank our speakers for really addressing your questions. We had one of the best speakers, sort of a winning team of speakers and participants today. But I do want to comment on the questions. So because we weren't able to take everyone's question, I would recommend that for those of you who asked a question or those of you who have a question yet in queue that wasn't answered, please take your question back to your treating healthcare team. Remember, they know you the best. They have your medical records in front of them. And you've learned a lot today, so that you may ask the question slightly differently based on the information you received today. So that's very important. I do want to remind all of you that you always should have the phone numbers for your how to contact your healthcare team evenings, weekends, and holidays. Those seem to be the most challenging times for people to reach their healthcare team. So always be sure to check and see who is available evenings, weekends, and holidays. Seems like during the day you're able to reach someone, but sometimes in the evening it's a bit challenging. So please be sure to get that information up front. Again, I want to thank you all for your participation today, and I want to wish you all a very fine day. Thank you all.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes the workshop, and you may now disconnect. Everyone, have a great day.